The reading this morning is from the Gospel of John, chapter 5, verses 1 to 15, the healing at the pool. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the lame, the blind, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he'd been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. When I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning. Well, last week we had a story about healing from John's Gospel, and today we've got another one. And I meet people all the time who are wanting healing, who've got physical ailments or long-term conditions or are struggling with things mentally. And it would be wonderful if we could just say, "This is what you do and you'll be well." If it was just a really straightforward, "Do this and this happens." But it's not. And as we come and look at this passage this morning, we're going to see some different aspects of a healing story. So let's leap straight in. We're seeing in this passage a man who's been ill or disabled for a very, very long time. A man who's got used to being disappointed. For years, he's been coming to this pool near one of the gates in Jerusalem. And it was a place of healing. People believed that if you got into the water when it was stirred up, then the first person in would receive their healing. They believed that it was an angel who came and stirred it around, but it was probably actually fed by a spring that every so often bubbled through. But this man has been there, longing for it to be his turn. 38 years, it tells us, he's been waiting. But for years, other people have got into the water before him. They've been able to get in first, so either they've been less needy than him, or they've had friends or family there who are with them, who can lift them in. And he's watched others get their chance. And all the time, every time he's struggled to get to the miracle, he's failed. I wonder what that did to him inside. I wonder if he was resigned to being the one who would never have his needs met. I wonder if he began to resent the other people there. And I wonder if his mental health was really struggling. NIV lists those who were there as the disabled, the lame, the blind, the paralyzed. And he's described as an invalid. I think that's a terrible word. Invalid, invalid, not valid, not valuable, not useful, because he is unable to do what normal, healthy people would. Invalid. I wonder if you ever feel that you're invalid. I don't believe that that's a description that Jesus would ever have used. No person in God's eyes is invalid. No one lacks value. No one is disqualified. Because our worth in God's eyes is not measured by our usefulness. I confess that when I first read this passage, I wondered why Jesus bothered to heal this miserable chap. He doesn't say please or thank you. He doesn't find out who Jesus is, even though he receives the most amazing personal healing. And later on, he even identifies Jesus when he knows that it will get him into trouble with the authorities. I might be wrong, but that seems like rather a betrayal to me. So why does Jesus heal him? He's not showing any great faith. I wonder what you think. Well, I think that this story actually tells us far more about the healer than about the man who was healed, if we look a bit deeper. On the surface, it's a pretty straightforward miracle. I realized once I'd written that it doesn't make sense. It's an oxymoron. How could a miracle be straightforward? But to the casual observer, if you're just reading through, there's a very simple exchange between the powerful teacher and the powerless invalid. You want to get well? Yes, but I can't get there quickly enough. Get up, pick up your mat and walk. Okay. And off he goes, exit stage right. It's beautiful, if somewhat puzzling. But if we look deeper at what Jesus is doing, we see a few things about him. Firstly, he's intentional. Jesus has gone to Jerusalem for one of the festivals. And he goes to this pool where he doesn't need to be. And once he's there, he notices and picks out one man amongst a great number of people, all in search of healing. But this one was perhaps the most disadvantaged and the most desperate. So Jesus goes looking. Reminds me of the lost sheep, that one sheep that the shepherd goes looking for. Jesus goes looking, and when he finds this man, he feels compassion. It's not dependent on what the man does or says, but when Jesus hears his story because of his suffering and his helplessness, he feels that compassion and reaches out to him proactively. So he goes looking, he feels compassion, and then Jesus exercises his authority with power. He doesn't ask him if he'd like to get up. He says, get up, pick up your mat, go home, don't come back. I read that in the bit where he says, take your mat. He's not going to need it again. He doesn't need to keep a place there. And then Jesus just slipped away into the crowd, because this isn't a spectacle. It's not about him showing how wonderful he is. His focus was purely upon that man, a person in pain. Later, we see that Jesus follows up this man with his healing. He seeks him out once more at the temple. The man didn't know who he was. He wouldn't have found Jesus again. But Jesus finds him and tells him how to stay well. He says, stop sinning. Get your relationship with God right. We see that Jesus is compassionate, He's powerful and he's concerned for an individual. But let's go a bit deeper still. This miracle happened in a public place on the Sabbath. Why? Jesus could have gone to that pool any day. The man had been there for 38 years. What would one more day have mattered? And when Jesus asks the man, "Do you want to get well?" he doesn't say yes, but not on the Sabbath. He didn't actually even just say, "Of course I do." He opened up to Jesus. He shared not only his story, but something of how he was feeling. There's the physical issue, but we hear the emotional pain too. Other people have always managed to get there when I can't. Jesus doesn't just do something to him or for him without first listening and giving him time, respecting his experience and valuing him as a person. And I found in my ministry that often what people need most, what makes them begin to feel a bit better, is being listened to, being given that time. Last week, we looked at the story of the official's son who was healed at a distance by Jesus in response to the man's faith. Jesus wasn't limited by physical factors because he's the Lord of creation. And in that case, he was responding to a cry of faith in a plea for a miracle. But in today's passage, we see the power of Jesus rescuing a man without demonstrable faith. I don't think he even expected Jesus to heal him, from what we're told. He might have expected him to help him into the water, but he didn't know who Jesus was. So it's significant that this miracle takes place on the Sabbath, because it shows that Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath too. His priorities are different. The leaders want to enforce the laws to control people. But Jesus breaks their rules to free this man. So, an interesting story, and I'm left with some questions that I feel really challenged by. Let's start with the easy one first. If we think about the Jewish leaders' reactions, they want to keep people under control. And I have to ask myself, do I want to see people freed from the things that hold them back, from the fullness of life and relationship with God for which they're created, whatever the inconvenience or cost to myself? Or do I want to enjoy my own freedom, regardless of the cost to others? Would I rather see control? Do I want to keep things as they are? Or am I open to the changes that God might have in mind? I was thinking about this in relation to asking people to Alpha. It might be much easier for us not to rock the boat. We might think that it doesn't really matter whether we ask people this time round or not. There'll always be another chance, because we don't want to change a relationship or a situation. But is that for our benefit or for those that we're trying to reach out to? Do I want to keep things as they are, or am I open to the changes that God might have in mind? Well, I'm afraid I think that's the easy question. If we go a little bit deeper, the man by the pool had been there for 38 years. He had been waiting longer than Jesus had been alive for this miracle to happen. He'd become resigned, I think, to his disability and the hopelessness of his situation. I wonder if there are things in your life and mine that are not as they should be, but that we've just got used to, that we accept now as normal? Are there things that we've lost hope that they can or ever will change? And so we don't bring them to Jesus now. Maybe there are habits that we've got into that feel unbreakable, even though we're a bit ashamed about them. And my second question is, what is there in me, in us, that Jesus can touch and heal if only we will let him? Do you want to get well? Asked Jesus. Do we want to be whole and free? Having healed the man and given him back his life and liberty, Jesus finds him in the temple and warns him to stop sinning. His physical healing is seen as a miracle, but his righteousness, his ongoing freedom in a right relationship with God, requires him to take some responsibility and to do something. If I've already accepted the gift of eternal life by receiving Jesus's offer to me of wholeness, what do I need to do to walk with Jesus freely today? Is there anything that I need to repent of or to turn around or away from? Because Jesus brings us into the kingdom. He offers us this new life, this new hope, this relationship with himself. But he doesn't do all the work. He then says, now you need to live in this way. There are ways that we can grow closer to God. As I was thinking about this talk, I was reminded of a song by Casting Crowns that I love. I've quoted it before, but I just want to read it again. I'm not going to sing it. You'll be relieved to hear. But it goes like this. Just listen and see what resonates with you. Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever-wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but wind. Still, you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you've told me who I am. I am yours. Who am I that the eyes that see my sin would look on me with love and watch me rise again? Who am I that the voice that calmed the sea would call out through the rain and calm the storm in me? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. It's not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. That man who was healed, who'd been ill for so long, didn't necessarily deserve or appreciate or understand his healing. But it was because of who Jesus was, because of the way that he reaches out and looks for us, that his compassion that rescues us. So I don't know what whether it's emotional, whether it's mental or psychological. We suggested earlier in the service that you find yourself a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil to write with. We're going to have a little while now just to respond. You might like to write down a word or a phrase or even a question that's struck you in our service. Perhaps it's quite a shallow one or perhaps it's quite a deep one. But then we're just going to sit with those things for a while with God. I wonder what you need to hear from him today. And the reason I want you to write it down is that I don't want us to lose those thoughts. This isn't something that we come and watch Sunday by Sunday and are entertained by. We are praying that God will speak to us as individuals and as a community. And part of that is that we need to respond. When Jesus told the man to get up and pick up his mat and walk, then he had to do that or he wouldn't have received his healing. So as we respond, God is calling us into relationship with him. So just catch that thought now. And then you might want to find some quiet time later to respond on your own. Or you might want to ask someone to pray with you about what you've written down. Maybe that's someone in your household this morning or a friend you can text or meet up with. When we meet together in person, we have prayer ministry at the end of the service. And we've been thinking about how we can still offer that in this time. I'd like to suggest that if you would like someone to pray for you from the prayer ministry team, then you can send an email to us at pastoral@stmaryreigate.org. So either email an individual, but if you don't know who to email, try pastoral@stmaryreigate.org and we will get back to you and arrange a time to have a chat and to pray. So let's just be quiet now and respond.